Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Wesley J. Smith, who is a noted author. He writes for Discovery.org. His work is often appearing in National Review and other great places. And he writes a lot of times on subjects related to the value of human life. And we're going to talk right now about embryonic research and pushes for things like that that can actually dehumanize humanity, really, in a big picture of things. Wesley, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. I hope you're well.
Yes, thank you. You too. So I understand that recently there's been a push by the Biden administration to allow for experiments on unborn little babies, or at least, you know, embryos.
Well, what you're finding is that the international stem cell researchers want to do away with what's called the 14-day rule. During the great embryonic stem cell debate during the George Bush years, quote, scientists, close quote, said, "We will never engage in experimentation on embryos beyond 14 days, because after 14 days, these embryos begin to differentiate, the neural system begins to develop, and so forth." And at the time, I said, the only reason they're saying that they will not permit research beyond 14 days is because they can't maintain embryos beyond 14 days. So they were not actually giving up anything that they could do. And I predicted at the time that once they could extend embryos in a dish beyond 14 days, they would want to get rid of the 14-day rule. And that is precisely what has happened. The International Stem Cell Association that kind of sets these voluntary guidelines for scientists have said no more 14-day rule. In fact, no more time limits whatsoever. We'll look at it on a case-by-case basis. And, Jerry, that would open up not only to extended embryonic research beyond, let's say, up to a month or so, but once there are artificial uteruses available, which are being researched, it could actually open the door to live fetal experimentation, what some people call fetal farming.
Oh, elaborate on that further.
Sure. Right now, of course, the time you can keep a human, a nascent human being, an embryo, alive outside of a woman's body is limited. As I said previously, it used to be about 10 days, which was why they agreed to the 14-day rule. Now it looks like, after some animal experimentation and so forth, that they might actually be able to keep embryos going for about a month. And so they want to be able to experiment on the embryos now beyond 14 days. Well, coming down the pike, it's not here yet, but certainly being experimented upon, are artificial wombs, artificial uteruses. And I predict that if you ever got to the time where you could actually take one of these embryos that you want to use in experimentation and instead of planting them in a woman, implant them in an artificial uterus, why, that would open the door to live fetal experimentation. And it's not as if that has never been done before, because it has. Back in the late 60s and the early 70s, there actually were live fetal experiments being done on fetuses that had been aborted and kept alive after the abortion. And it was only turned down when it became public. And leading the charge, by the way, was Ted Kennedy to stop the government from funding such experiments. But in those days, 1972, that was before the real collapse of the sanctity of life ethic. Today, we don't have the same support for the sanctity of life. And indeed, as we saw in the embryonic stem cell debate, when you tell people, hey, Uncle Charlie's Parkinson's can be cured with this experimentation, many people say, okay, then let's do it.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. When you're saying all these things, I can't help but think of that story from a few years ago where the videographer, whistleblower, you know, David Dalyden a compatriot or whatever, they were able to expose the fact that Planned Parenthood apparently is trafficking in baby body parts, for experimentation.
Right. And what happened was Dalyden basically taped people in public settings. I mean, he didn't kind of tap people's phones or anything, but he just engaged in conversations with people at restaurants and things of that sort. And we found out that not only was Planned Parenthood selling baby parts, but they were actually, in some cases, changing the way abortions were conducted in order to further that market. And immediately, as soon as that story came out, the media started saying, well, this is discredited. It was never discredited. Planned Parenthood denied it, but that's not the same thing as being discredited. And then eventually it turned out that Planned Parenthood had to say, well, yes, we were doing some of that, and the answer is we won't sell these parts anymore. But you see, there has been recently some experimentation done where mice were actually fitted with the scalps, this is awful, of aborted fetuses, and very ghoulish experiments to see how those things, you know, I'm not even sure what the purpose of those were, but it's just a really sad thing, and it's a very utilitarian thing that we could take nascent human life, unborn life, and treat it as if it was a corn crop. This is very disturbing, and there's no reason to think that any of this would be limited to early embryos, even if people think that's acceptable, once you can have later stage fetuses. In fact, some in bioethics have actually argued that women should be paid to gestate for a longer period of time so that when the abortion occurs, that the organs can be used in other fetal parts for medical or research purposes. So it's not as if this is something I'm making up. This has actually been argued by some very mainstream bioethicists.
All right, now, I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm about to say, but here it goes. If you read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by William Shirer, which is often viewed as one of the greatest, most definitive sources on the Nazi movement and so forth, you see in there that there's some pages dedicated to experiments that the Nazis did, scientific experiments, for example, led by Joseph Mengele and so forth, where they were actually dealing with, for example, they would compare a Jewish body with the body of a Nordic, you know, pure Aryan. Here's this Norwegian man, he's 30 years old. Here's this Jew, he's 30 years old. Let's take the two of them, we'll submerge them into freezing water, see, you know, how well does the Aryan do versus the Jew, that kind of thing. They wrote all this stuff down. It's all written down. I'm sure that if a scientist today were to say, well, you know, in this experiment from Joseph Mengele, blah, 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 he would be totally discredited. But this is scary because, you know, there's got to be, as you said earlier, a sanctity of life ethic when it comes to, you know, experiments on that involve human beings.
There certainly has to be, it seems to me, a moratorium on some of the these experiments, not only in terms of what we've just been discussing, but things like genetic engineering of human beings. That's already been done in China, where the CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, technique of gene editing was done to change the genome of two babies that were born, and it wasn't actually done to benefit them particularly. The genes that were knocked out have been associated with catching HIV, but those babies weren't in danger of catching HIV, and because of what was done, they may actually be more susceptible to the flu. And so I have been arguing for a long time, we need to have a moratorium on some of these very powerful biotechnologies so that we can have a worldwide conversation about not only what can possibly be done, but whether something should be done. I mean, we could drop an atomic bomb on the moon. That doesn't mean we should drop an atomic bomb on the moon. But we're not allowed to have these conversations because all we get are voluntary guidelines, which are worth the paper they're written on in some way, because if a scientist doesn't care what his or her peers think, then they're going to do what they want. And the only other real substantive limitations have to do with what can be funded by the government. And right now there are plans afoot in Congress, for example, perhaps to do away with some of the NIH funding restrictions that, for example, do not permit embryos to be created with federal money for the purpose of research as opposed to procreation. So there's a conversation that needs to be had here, because these are the most powerful technology since the development of the splitting of the atom, and yet we're not being given any kind of moratoriums on this research so that we can take the time to have that conversation in depth, not only to look at what might be learned scientifically, but what the cost ethically would be of this research. This is something that we need to take our time with, and that is not that time is not being afforded to us, because the only thing that exists are voluntary guidelines, and if you try to do something mandatory, people in bioethics and in the research community scream and holler.
Well, you know, I think the day could actually come when, and because so often the unthinkable becomes the thinkable because they actually start to do it. The day could actually come when scientists will say, oh, well, let's look at that Nazi research after all, because, you know, they did some pretty important stuff here. I mean, it's scary to even think about that. Speaking of totalitarians and research related to human beings and so forth, is it true that at one time Stalin wanted to somehow take gorillas and combine them with human beings to create like a warrior race?
I don't know if that's true. I have heard some stories about how current Russia may actually want to do some kind of restoration of famous warriors in terms of cloning. But, you know, that's pretty far-fetched stuff, so I wouldn't worry about that too much. But I'll tell you, I am worried that we are in danger of looking at human life through a very utilitarian lens. Here's one example. Vermont passed a law that permits abortion through the ninth month, but that's not what I'm talking about here. They also had a provision in that law that specifically says that a fertilized egg, which, by the way, is a misnomer, there's no such thing as a fertilized egg, that would be an embryo, and embryos and fetuses have no independent rights. That has nothing to do with the abortion question, which sounds in the issue of whether a woman can be required to gestate when she doesn't want to. When you say that an embryo and a fetus has no independent rights, you're basically saying you can do whatever you want to them, which is what we've just been discussing.
Wow. Now, what is a chimera, C-H-I-M-E-R-A? And are there plans?
Chimera.
Chimera. Okay.
A chimera is an entity, like an organism, that may have genes from more than one species in it. That in and of itself isn't necessarily bad, but it depends on what you're doing with it. For example, there is research because of our organ shortage to try to make it so that we could use pig organs in place of human organs. We already, for example, use pig heart valves in some human surgeries. And so in order to prevent rejection, some of these pigs have had some human genes put in them in order to make it so that hopefully at some point, if you needed to use a pig's liver, then it wouldn't be rejected by the human being. That's chimeric research, and there's nothing essentially immoral about that. But it's when you and if you decide to start taking human life and or animal life and mixing it so that it takes on a human nature in the sense of capacities and capabilities. For example, they recently did research where they put in into monkey embryos human stem cells and developed human-type brain cells in that organism. Now, if you're going to create a monkey that had part human brain, you begin to think about what are the ethical ramifications of this, not only from the human exceptionalism perspective, but from the animal potential for animal abuse in the sense of if this was a creature with heightened intellectual capabilities that came to understand that it was kind of a unique situation, it could be an anguishing thing for such a creature. And the unfortunate thing is that people such as Dawkins has actually written that he would like to see something done because he wants to destroy the concept of human exceptionalism, that is the unique value of human life. Well, that would be a terrible consequence for us. If we ever lose the concept of human exceptionalism, it's the end of universal human rights, because of being human isn't what gives us the moral right to be treated equally. What does?
Your website is still waronhumans.org, correct?
That's for a book. Better to, for most of my stuff is discovery.org.
Okay.
And go to the Human Exceptionalism Center, and you'll see all my articles archived and other discussions on the importance of human exceptionalism. And I, pretty soon, I'd love to talk to you about it in the near future. I'm going to be starting a podcast called Humanize, in which I will be interviewing people dealing with these issues, not just pontificating for myself.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much. All the best.